Good morning and welcome back to What's Going On with Earl Ingram. I have to say to you that this morning I come to you with a heavy heart. I am a person, if you don't know by now, who's dedicated his adult life to serving others. And I have done this not seeking accolades or for, any purpose or reason other than I think that human beings and humanity, there can be nothing more important than human beings. And I don't care what it is. Money has its place. Fame has its place. All of those things have their place, but none of them rise above human beings. And so that's the kind of person that I have been created to be. And that is the course that I've lived my adult life following. And now I'm soon to be 72 years old. And so I'll leave here serving because I know the importance of human life. We're here for a short period of time, and in the twinkling of an eye, we are gone. The nation in which I live, I've seen the ups and downs of her. I've seen her when she was concerned about other nations, human beings across this earth, and that there were resources that our nation would provide for other human beings because they weren't American citizens. But there was a time in this society when other human beings' lives had value. And I never will forget UNICEF, programs like that, that went all over the world and third world nations and other places offering sustenance to human beings that had no connection to our nation other than the fact that they were human beings. And since we were touting the fact that we were a Christian nation and that our nation was founded under the Judeo-Christian ethic, we used to attempt to kind of live up to that in my lifetime. But today, we are a far cry from that. I'll tell you why I wanted to have this conversation this morning. Several reasons. On 2 days ago, an 11-year-old child was shot and killed in the city where I live by a 13-year-old child. And as a father, I couldn't begin to imagine, or an uncle, which I am, not a grandparent yet, but I couldn't, the pain that I felt. And I have to tell you, it's not the first time, because thus far this year, September 18th, in the city of Milwaukee, 23 students, children of Milwaukee Public Schools have been murdered. 23 children have been murdered in the city of Milwaukee. And I didn't go back to the year prior or the year before that, because I'm sure the numbers Maybe they aren't quite that high, but they're up there. And I don't know when that doesn't become a priority. You know, I just don't know what it's going to take to wake people up. We're talking about Milwaukee, but this could be Chicago, which I'm sure the numbers are higher. It could be Atlanta. It could be Houston. It could be Dallas, Texas. It could be Minnesota. You know, it could be, you know, Baltimore. It could be Pittsburgh. It could be Florida. It could be anywhere. And children are dying by the hand of the bullet overwhelmingly. There was a time when that wasn't the case in this nation. But it is now. And so I want to take a few minutes today in this very special podcast to give you my thoughts and how my heart breaks and bleeds as I don't see the steps necessary happening to prevent this. And if we don't do something to prevent it, those numbers are going to continue to escalate. And if that wasn't bad enough, on 2 days ago, a family of six children, ages 9, 7, 5, 3, 2, and 2 months, were found in a locked storage unit at 1:30 in the morning. Six babies, because the mother and father could not afford to keep a roof over their children's heads. In America, the wealthiest nation on earth. I wanted to talk about this because if we don't feel that pain, and this nation can't feel that pain of its citizens, our future is in jeopardy. Never mind the wealth of the nation. Are I not my brother's keeper? The question was asked. Are we not our brother's keepers? Let me begin by talking about what had to transpire in a family, a man and a woman who loved their children. Clearly they loved their children, because they tried to hold the family together. And yet, they couldn't afford to keep a roof over their heads. They had to resort to living out of a storage facility. Now let's just, for a moment, try to envision what that must have looked like. A storage facility as a place of refuge. No running water. No toilet. No refrigerator. Nothing and nowhere to store food. Barbaric. In 2025. And I later found out that it's not the exception, that there are many people who can't afford the rent. They don't make enough money in the wealthiest nation on earth to keep a roof over their heads. Why is that not a priority in this country? Let me give you some statistics. if you're thinking that this is, you know, just an exception. Homeless counts are at a record high. And this is from the National Alliance to End Homelessness. Homeless counts are at a record high. The United States experienced an unprecedented rise in homelessness driven by the nation's affordability crisis. Homelessness increased 18% from 650,104 people during the 2023 to 771,480 people during 2024. So what are some of the reasons why a family would be living out of a storage facility, which provides only one thing for a human being? And that's a form of shelter. That's all that that storage facility could provide. A place with a roof over their heads. None of the other aspects of living a reasonable life. Storage facility doesn't offer those things. A storage facility was built to house things, not humankind. You know, I recall when I was running my football league some 4 years ago, 5 years ago, had a storage facility. And we stored all of our equipment in that facility. Cold, barren, no electricity. It certainly served its purpose for storing things, not human beings. Affordable housing, weak safety nets drive record high homelessness. When people cannot afford to pay rent, homelessness increases. America's housing affordability crisis is caused by deeply rooted challenges. Not enough deeply affordable housing development and preservation. Inadequate rental assistance programs, persistently low incomes, and weak safety nets, like Social Security, that have helped people pay for housing. The end of federal COVID-19 relief funds, which temporarily expanded assistance programs and household incomes, and discriminatory policies and practices that make it even harder for certain groups to find housing. In America, the land of the free and the home of the brave, the lack of deeply affordable housing is the primary cause of homelessness. For many, rising costs create an impossible choice between paying for housing and other necessities like healthcare, groceries, or clothing. Only 35 affordable and available rental homes exist for every 100 extremely low-income renter households. Let me repeat that and listen to this information and try to wrap your arms, your mind, and your heart around this deplorable number. A number that's known. Only 35 affordable and available rental homes exist for every 100 extremely low-income renter households. Year after year, this number stays the same or shifts incrementally as the development and preservation of affordable housing does not keep up with demand. Meanwhile, elected officials have failed to fix the problem, especially by allocating too few resources to programs that help people pay for increasingly expensive rents. Failing systems push affordable housing further out of reach. In this context, people across the country from every demographic group and geography are unable to find housing. But discriminatory policies and a lack of coordinated support services make it even harder for specific groups, people of color, gender expansive people, and people who are in the immigration system, the child welfare system, the criminal legal system, and the healthcare system face different but significant barriers to finding stable housing. Now, so when people judge that family, and there's been many people judging that family, the mom and dad were arrested. They are still incarcerated as we speak. And the family is under child protective services. Is that the answer? Is separating the family and having them split up and now divided from one another? The only thing that this family has is the love for their siblings. Remember, these are children 9, 7, 5, 3, 2, and 2 months. And the impact on their lives will be permanent. Yes, being locked in a storage place is inhumane. And it certainly is not something that any of us encourage. But what about a family, human beings, that were at wit's end and had nowhere else to turn? No place else they could go to seek refuge as a family. In this nation, and we're not talking about some third world nation, we're talking about this nation. As we are watching the stock market soar and the wealthy become wealthier and more billionaires being created, am I not my brother's keeper? So where do we go from here? We know the statistics. They're out there. They've been out there for years and even for decades. Where this nation is headed as it relates to those in this nation who haven't been able to navigate it. Make no mistake. We need to stop acting as if everybody should be able to safely navigate a capitalistic society. It's not easy. I'm telling you, as a 71-year-old man, it is not easy. And we ought to stop acting like it is. And so decades ago, we knew it wasn't easy. And so there were all sorts of safety nets created by our nation. But I would say a different segment and different group of people who led our government, who apparently were more caring and more understanding and who abided by the Christian ethic, it's not there. And we're getting further away from it. So I'll say to you, are there easy solutions? There clearly are. Prioritize families again in this nation. For heaven's sakes, what kind of future does a nation have that doesn't prioritize families and children? Now the Dow Jones is at an all-time high. It keeps climbing and people are getting wealthier. And never mind that we're watching the the economy slip towards recession. The telltale signs are there. So the number of people who we see now, we're talking about that are homeless, and these types of situations, like the one that just occurred a couple days ago with six babies being locked up in a storage facility and crying for help. Not only were the babies physically crying to get out of that place, they knew that that's not a safe place. And human beings and children especially are created with wisdom to understand when they're not safe. And so they whimpered and they cried out, and somebody heard them. And that's how they were rescued, because somebody heard babies crying for help. Babies don't get to pick their families. They don't. And if you're fortunate enough that you were born into a family where your parents were able to give you protection and a life of ease, well, you're fortunate. But so many people aren't. And so when I hear the judgmental conversations that are being had about these parents, let's take the father. Let's take him for a moment. That young man, if nothing else, you have to give him credit for trying to hold his family together. My God, doesn't he get some credit for that? Shouldn't he receive some support? As many other men have walked away from their families, many men who have been, who've gotten divorced for whatever reason and walked away from their families. It's not easy. But shouldn't we give this young man some credit? Maybe he's couldn't navigate a system today that is stacked against so many Americans. Look, man, I grew up at a time that I could walk into a place at 18 years of age and live a middle-class lifestyle, and live the American dream with a high school diploma, and work somewhere for 34 years. Every first of the month, I receive something called a pension. That used to be the rule in this nation. People realized that we have to support those people who have done services for this nation as they age so they don't wind up living in poverty. And so they created things called pensions. And then in the 1980s, some amongst us decided that the corporations, which waxed rich from the labor of the employees, we no longer can afford to give you those things. And so it began. And so the people were no longer important. Profit was. And so what it's wrought, and that way of thinking has wrought, is pay scales in this society that are abysmal, that are somewhere around. I mean, I live in the state of Wisconsin. If you can believe this or wrap your arms around this, The what do you call it, man? It's the minimum wage in the state of Wisconsin in 2025 is $7.25. $7.25. I know you'll say, well, yeah, Earl, that's what it is, but nobody pays that. Yeah, I know. That people pay $9. People are working. They are. They're doing the best they can. Shouldn't we reward those who go to work every day and put forth that work ethic that built this nation? I'll bet you 10 to 1 that that father worked because somebody had to pay for that storage unit. Somebody had to buy the food to feed those children and the diapers necessary for the young ones. Listen, he's not alone. Many others are like him. When are we going to understand in this nation that we have a responsibility to the citizens of this nation, for heaven's sakes? They're born in this nation. They're American citizens. They've got to be prioritized. But who has the courage and the will to make that happen? You and I can't do it. Politicians. It's why I use the term politricksters. Those numbers that I prattled off at the beginning of this conversation, those numbers are there for the world to see. They know they exist. But where's the courage to turn it around? Where's that courage? My God, 6 babies locked in a storage unit, 1:30 in the morning, whimpering. Maybe they're hungry. You know, maybe they're cold. Those storage units don't have heat, you know. They don't have electricity. Even the babies know this is not right. So furthermore, what is the impact on those children who are being traumatized? You know, they grow up to be adults. We ask the questions constantly. What's wrong with the adults? What's happening in this country? Why are people doing the things that they're doing? If we don't prioritize children, when they become adults, we're all going to pay the price for that. We must prioritize children. They didn't ask to come here. They certainly didn't ask to come here. But a moral nation is one that looks to find solutions to these problems. 100 people looking for shelter that they know there's only 35 shelters available. Whose fault is that? Is that that family's fault? No, it's not. You know the numbers, politricksters. You know the numbers. Why don't we fix it? We can fix it. We're the wealthiest nation on earth. Now, let me quickly go to the 11-year-old shot and killed by a 13-year-old. Listen, I know. In this nation, there's a right to bear arms. I'm not unmindful of that. Me personally, I don't own a weapon. I'm 71 years old. I've only had a weapon in my hand once in my entire life. That was 2 years ago when I was invited to the Citizens Academy of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. I went through training for the FBI. I was chosen. I was one of, I think, about 30-some-odd people invited over, I think, about a four-month period to go through training with the Federal Bureau of Investigation. And so for the first time in my life, at 70 years old, they took us to a range. And so I fired a weapon. I would have certainly gone to my grave never having owned a weapon, never having fired a weapon. I was comfortable with that. My beliefs were that, you know, the weapon didn't make me comfortable. So where did I get that from? My father raised 13 children. 13. And he and my mother were married for 66 years. And so I've been married to my wife for 43. But you know what? My dad never had a weapon in the house. Now listen, I'm not opposed to anybody who owns weapons. People have a right to own weapons. After all, we live in a nation that says people have a right to own weapons. But when there are more weapons in the nation than there are people, something is wrong. And when more people don't own weapons in the nation than do, and yet less than half of the population owns over 450 million weapons in a population that's only 350 million, it tells you the staggering amount of weapons that some people have in this country. I remember as a young man in my 30s talking with a coworker who told me he had 40 weapons and over 10,000 rounds of ammunition. One person. And all I could think about is, why is that legal? What purpose could one person have owning over 30 weapons and 10,000 rounds of ammunition? Where does that make sense? Well, you know, Earl, the Second Amendment says we have a right to bear arms. The number one cause of death in this nation is by gunshot. All right? It's by gunshot. And so when we continue to produce more and more weapons, knowing that there are already more than enough weapons already in the pipeline, that those manufacturers of weapons don't need to continue to manufacture more and more weapons. How does that make sense? The conversation that I'm having now is one based on what's sensical and what's not sensical. I understand the weapon manufacturers are business people. And manufacturing weapons is big business. But heaven's sakes, 11-year-old boy killed in the city of Milwaukee thus far this year, calendar year, calendar month and date September 18, 2025. It's 23 children of Milwaukee public schools have died by gunshot. Babies. Don't their lives matter? Don't they matter? You know, not only are we talking about guns that are manufactured legally, but it's legal, for heaven's sakes, to create something called ghost guns. Ghost guns. Guns that you can produce off the internet with no serial numbers, meaning they can't be tracked. Somebody tell me how that makes any sense. And yet it's legal. I don't understand. As I watch the family weeping and the people gathered, as we see so many times, even when they're adults and not just children who die by the hand, by the assassin's bullet, a bullet that tears through the flesh and destroys the organs that allow the most precious creation on the planet, life, to be taken away. And you watch families that will never recover as they do the makeshift memorials. And they come together and they try to make sense of why their loved one is gone. Life is short enough. The goal in the life is supposedly to live as many years as you can. And then and only then should the life end. But it ends at a ripe old age, not at 11, not at 13, not at 15, not at 24, not at 33, because somebody pulled the trigger. Well, because, well, why'd you do it? Well, he said something I didn't like. He said something about me, he said something about, okay. Man, if you didn't have the gun, you know, maybe you could do what we did back in the day. And mano y mano, all right, man, you got an issue with me? Okay, let's do this thing after it's over. You know, I used to love watching the cowboy movies, right? And what I always loved about the cowboy movies is they show the guys fighting, and after the fight, pick the guy up, all bloodied and beat up, and said, they go up to the bar. They say, hey, let's have a beer. Oh, okay, Jack. But they certainly didn't take somebody else's life. Come on. When does it end? When does common sense come into play? I know that what I'm talking about now is not going to end because of the conversation I'm having right now. I know. I know things are going to get worse. They're going to continue to manufacture even more guns. Politicians aren't going to do the right thing for political reasons. I don't know what possible reason you can have for not banning ghost guns. I don't understand that. And I don't think there's anybody who can explain to me how that makes any sense whatsoever. Allowing people to produce guns that can't be traced. How insane is that? That at the least should be stopped. Okay, and so who has the courage to force that to come to an end? I just want to say, that if this 11-year-old boy, baby, you know, who's gone, I heard the family members saying, they referred to him as Little Man. Little Man is no longer with us. Can you imagine the impact? Now you may ask, well, how did it happen? Well, I if you've got weapons in your home, please use some common sense. And if you've got children in your home as well, use some common sense in this case. The 11-year-old boy had the gun. The baby got the gun out of his parents' home. And he's on the street. He's a child. He's got the killing stick in his hand. He doesn't understand the impact or the implications of all that can happen with that. He's a baby. And he walks around his boys and he shows this gun. And the 13-year-old sees him with the gun. And the 13-year-old wants to feel that power that the 11-year-old is showing his boys. And so the 13-year-old reaches out to try to get the gun from the 11-year-old. And circumstances being what they were and are, the gun fired. And the end of a promising 11-year-old life happened. Now, he shouldn't have had to die in vain. Lessons should be learned from that young boy whose life was sacrificed. Not just by his family, but by a society that is drunk with seeing power at the end of a gun. Okay? That's where power is. That's how I get power. I have power. I have the power to cause life or death in my hands. Well, guess how twisted that way of thinking is. He who determines life or death, who lives and who dies, should be, has always been the Creator. The Creator who gave life to each and every one of us. None of us gave life to anyone else. You know, the Creator gives us the ability to have life come through us in the birth of our children. But life and death is not for man to determine. But that's where we are. We've got to get back to what's real, what's important. And I want to end this podcast with a couple observations. We've got to get to our young people. My God, the young people walking the streets with automatic weapons. How in the hell did they get their hands on automatic weapons when they don't have food? When they don't have clothing? How is it possible that they can walk around with Glocks? One of the most powerful handguns ever created. But they're in the hands of children. You know, I've talked with young children in schools. It's one of the things I do. And I ask them, how many of you have weapons? I'm talking about middle school children. And they look at one another. and they're unwilling to admit it. So I would say, listen, I already know you have guns, right? I'm not foolish. I know you have guns. And one of the young men said to me, he said, Mr. Ingram, where I live, I need the gun for protection. I'm talking about a middle school student, seventh grade, eighth grade, what, 13 years old? He said, well, when we come to school, we carry our weapon. I'm like, wow, man, carry your weapon? What do you do with it? You can't bring it in school? Well, we hide it in the bushes around school. If that's not eye-opening and something that our nation needs to pay focus and attention to, I don't know what it is. Thank you for allowing me to get that off of my chest. It's not going to change anything. I just had to share it. Thank you very much for listening. Tell somebody about the podcast, and we'll see you next time.